Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Well, shame on me. I don't get the following gentleman and his type interviewed as much. Music directors, actor, composer, music director, and one of my favorite musicians in town, Malcolm Rule. Say hello, Malcolm.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about Ring of Fire at the Mercury.
It's a great tribute, musical tribute to Johnny Cash. Scores of Johnny Cash songs and bits of information about his life with a great group of people. The actors are the band are the actors.
And which we love. That's a great format, yeah.
It's sort of a kind of a concert format, but with interwoven with stories that relate to Johnny's life. And it's just such a great group of people. We feel like a band and a cast. Because this is a remount of a production we did last year at Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana, we have been together, been apart, and now back together. And I think that gives us a sense of ensemble in a musical family kind of way that really makes every night special for us.
And it makes it special for the audience. There's such a high energy to this show. I'm a Johnny Cash fan, but I never realized how exciting his stuff can be.
Well, most of us have no downtime during the show. We're either on stage all the time, or maybe we're off stage for a couple of seconds doing a quick change. So, in that sense, it's also like a concert, and then it's end to end for all of us. So there's a certain energy level that one has to conjure up in order to do that. And I think we all feed off each other's energy too. And when it's working, it comes back to us from the audience as well, because they pick up on that.
Well, I know opening night here at the Mercury, there was electricity in the air, and it was just fantastic.
Yeah, there was.
In fact, I was getting aggravated at some of the people were clapping and, making it a little bit harder to hear, although you could hear you. But that shows a lot when audiences do that.
Yeah, we've had great audience response, not only from Johnny Cash fans, but from many people who we've met in the lobby afterwards saying, I didn't know this music, or I didn't really know, never thought of myself as a Johnny Cash fan, but... the show now, I'm going to go out and check out all this. I mean, there's a lot of stuff I didn't know, and thank you for introducing us to it. And, we have succeeded in opening up the music and the words and the a lot of what Johnny Cash was about to a lot of new people.
So tell us what your role is in the show.
I'm the musical director, and I also am one of the musicians, and I sing, and have a couple of lines, because the story gets passed around to everybody at some point or another in the show. And I was asked to music direct this by Brian Russell, who is the director, when we did it in Indiana. And he and I have worked together before and since with a couple of other things. And I love working with him.
He's top director.
He's very musical, so we work together well. We work together well in terms of knowing what the other one is thinking about and crafting. And so it's a really good back and forth relationship.
So as music director, be a little more specific for people who don't know what that is, what your role is.
Well, it's interesting that you ask that question, because it's different on different shows and it's different in different productions. And there are a lot of people who ask that question. To me, if I had to like totally encapsulate what a music director does or what their responsibility is, it's to make sure the show sounds good. That's
okay.
Really an oversimplification. In a show like this, it's the most important thing, and I always say it's 90 or 95% of it, is casting. It's getting the right people who have the skill sets and the talents to do everything that we're asking them to do, which is a lot.
Yeah.
And pull it off seamlessly. So, I'm always happy when all of that works out the way, I'm hoping it did, and in this case, this is one of those shows where it worked out better than I hoped it would, and it's...
Well, I know Johnny Cash's music really well. I've been listening to it all my life, and boy, I'll tell you, it was like you were channeling them. I mean, it was like I was there, at the Grand Ole Opry with them or on some tour. The sound was just fantastic.
Well, part of it, there's a couple of things there that I'd like to address. One of them is that, the cast that we have has so much respect for the music. that everybody is all about recreating that exact sense and the excitement of it and the emotions of it without impersonating Johnny. And so
it doesn't sound like hokey karaoke at all.
Yeah. And a lot of that is it's a theatrical conceit. It's finding it from the inside out rather than, you know, I mean, we have a great wealth of Johnny Cash history now that this cast knows because they are, you know, they've learned everything they can about not just the music, not just about what we're doing on stage, but about the man. And so they bring that.
Particularly in the earlier scenes when he's the farmer in Arkansas, is it?
Mm-hmm. His family, yeah.
Yeah, which a lot of people didn't know about that.
And that's one of the things that musically was really interesting for me is how do we tell that part of the story that's using Johnny Cash's songs, although not the arrangements that everybody knows, just to give that sense of what that, to sort of recall that time in Arkansas, in poor rural Arkansas, through Johnny Cash's songs, but with arrangements that were more, that recall that.
Well, I heard a banjo in that, which mm-hmm. you don't generally hear in Johnny Cash's right. later stuff, right?
And, you know, we have fiddle in the show, and there's not a whole lot of Johnny Cash songs with fiddle in them either.
You even have some piano.
That too.
Is that what you guys put in, or is that from some of Johnny Cash's stuff?
It's a sort of a complicated story. Yeah. The original production of Ring of Fire, which was a much bigger production than what we are doing here, that was done on Broadway. Richard Maltby oversaw the production, or a smaller production in Milwaukee that is now being licensed to regional theaters. That was five people, and we augmented that with the drums and the piano here. So we're slightly bigger than that small version, but there's all kinds of incarnations of both of those versions out there.
But did Johnny Cash use drums and piano in a lot of his stuff?
In the later stuff, there's drums in a lot of Johnny Cash's music. Piano, there are a handful of songs that have piano, but it certainly was not what one thinks of when one thinks of Johnny Cash's music. The early stuff was really acoustic guitar, electric guitar, and upright bass, and that's what a lot of the early records were. And sometimes there were two guitars, but really a lot of the other sounds, the instruments that we use, were either later additions, things that happened on some of the bigger produced records, or things that just really aren't associated specifically with his records.
Okay. How much did you have to do with the casting of the musicians? Well, actually, it's everybody, right? Because they're everybody's...
Right, yes. And that's another thing that, why I say Brian Russell and I work well together, because he understood that, and he knew that, he gave me license to say, well, this is what I need, and I have to make sure that I get this from this person and this from that person in order to make the vision work. And once we started with a core of people and started building on that, and I knew what I needed to fill in, I knew exactly, or I felt like I knew exactly what it was that I needed to do.
And you cast two people as Johnny Cash, right?
Yeah, the script is sort of written that way. It's so that was something that we knew going into it. And so we had to get two people who could do that, who could pull off the...
What's the difference between the two? I know the one young man, he's got a deeper voice. He sounds a lot more like the older Johnny Cash.
Well, they're basically cast as young Johnny and older Johnny, and it allows for the older Johnny to basically sort of narrate the play and comment on himself as a younger person. Right. By having two different actors who actually sing the songs as Johnny.
How about, does it vocally? I mean, a lot of songs to sing in a short period of time if it's just one.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know whether that was, part of the original idea of the show is to split it up that way, or just to make it more of an ensemble piece. But one of the things that even though we're not looking, I was never looking for impersonators in the sense that we sometimes know those kinds of performance vehicles.
That drives me crazy. I hate that.
So what we've tried to figure out was what is the essence that is important. And all of the songs we try to do as close to and most of them we do exactly in the same key that Johnny did it, because even if your voice does not sound exactly like Johnny Cash's, that's part of what that was. You have to have that low resonance, you have to have that vocal gravitas, and you have to, people know that those songs live down there, and so that was one of the big important things in the casting that we wanted to make sure we could do.
And are they natural at it, or do they have to reach?
No, they are.
Good.
They are.
Because then they're not straining their voice every night. Then.
Yeah, and actually it's interesting. I think that low resonance is a lot harder to say, well, I'm going to do that for this show, than even sort of screaming high. You either have it or you don't. You know, and whether you use it all the time or that's where you mostly sing, that's another thing. But if there's something that's got to be there just physiologically to make
it. How many instruments do you play in the show? I know you all play it more than one.
I think it's five. I don't know. You got the program.
Okay, five. And what would you say your strongest suit as a musician is?
It varies. And every time in my life that I have said, you know, I have got to focus, I am a bass player. That's what I do. I'm going to be a bass player. Somebody calls me and says, hey, I got this guitar gig. You want to do it? I'm like, well, okay. And then all of a sudden, nah, I'm a guitar player again. And guitar was my first instrument. As a kid, knowing music from playing the guitar and knowing harmony, I sort of taught myself. We had a piano in the house, and I kind of taught myself piano. Took cello lessons in junior high school and high school. And then finally really took piano lessons in college. And it wasn't until my senior year of college that I decided I really wanted to be a bass player. And I've done that for many, many years. If I get hired to do a pit gig or to do a jobbing gig to play a wedding or something, a one-shot deal, it's more as a bass player than anything else. But, you know, for one of the things I love about doing theater and doing this kind of theater is that it allows me to explore lots of other things that I'm really interested in, and
so if it's got strings, you'll like to play it, huh?
Yeah, or give strings, a whirl. Strings and keys, I say, are the things that I'm not a wind person at all.
Okay. Yeah, I tried one time making noise in a trumpet. I couldn't do it. I didn't realize how hard that stuff is to do. My God, thank God for musicians, you know. But also, let's talk about you as an actor. Is that something you wanted to do, or something by necessity, or
it totally happened by chance. I was in New York trying to make a name for myself as a musician, but also as a songwriter. And, you know, I wanted a record deal. I wanted to be, you know, up on stage with doing my music with my band, touring and recording. And that was, you know, my goal as a young 20-something. And I played a lot of different kinds of music, which has always been... When I was younger, I thought that in some ways that lack of focus, both on what instrument I'm playing, but also what kind of music I'm playing, was sort of detrimental to, you know.
You thought that at first?
I did, because I you know, the people I saw who were the top studio bass player in New York, or the people who were getting the record deals, they had a really set idea of what they wanted to do, and they followed through on it. And I was a little too, you know. I could get distracted by, oh, that's really cool. I would love to do that. Oh, no, look at the... Oh,
just love to explore.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah.
Now, at my age now, I think that was not only because that's the way my life went, I think also that it's allowing me to still work. I think it's one of the things that makes this show successful, that I'm up on stage with a bunch of multi-instrumentalists. It makes the
And major talents, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
It makes the logistics of coming up with different textures and colors for the show, when you have the actors as the musicians, it makes it what one of the things I think makes it exciting. But to get back to your question, I was playing clubs in New York, and a show that was running off Broadway in a very small house to great audience response. Called Pump Boys and Dinettes in 1981. They actually didn't have any understudies, and because that show, it was one of the first really early musicians theater shows. Now there's so many of them. You know?
Yeah, that is one of the groundbreaking. Yeah, that's right.
And so they decided they were going to, rather than put out an audition call in the actors' networks, they were going to go look watch people play. And they came to a club I was in, and they invited me to audition. And they invited me to audition as a bass player, which in that show was a non-singing, non-speaking role. But then they found out that I played other instruments, and they said, "Do you want to, you know, come in and play a little guitar, play some piano?" And initially, they offered me the job to understudy all four Pump Boys. and at the time, they were still off Broadway, and financially, it for me to stop working in order to understudy, it didn't look like, you know, it was going to happen for me that I was going to be able to do it, even though I loved the show when I went to see it. But then they went to Broadway, and they said, "Hey, you want to do it now?" And I said, "Absolutely." And that's where it started. And musical direction, even though I had dabbled in that in high school, and I never professionally wanted to, that was never on my radar either. But literally doing Pump Boys and Dinettes and understudying all of the male roles, when subsequent productions started to happen, I got offered the musical direction gig partly because I knew all of the parts, and a lot of them weren't written down note for note as score.
That's good.
And
hide that copy, huh?
and had some success with that, including the production at the Apollo Theater here in Chicago.
That ran for a long time, didn't it?
Ran for almost 5 years, and that was basically what moved me to Chicago. I came here to do it for 6 weeks, and five years later, I was like, "Oh, I live here."
Cool.
Chicago is such a great theater town, and I fell in love with the marriage of music and theater. That was a really sort of pivotal time in my life, moving to Chicago, but also being much more involved in the theater and seeing that as my career.
And you've never looked back, huh?
Say I've never looked back, because you always do. You know, you always look back and say, "Well, what if this had happened, or what if that had happened?" But I feel blessed to have discovered that, because I love lots of things about how music informs theater and vice versa. And what's really interesting to me is that I discovered that in a town that is one of the best theater cities in the world.
I agree.
And there's so much theater here, there's so much great talent here, and more importantly, the only reason all of that exists here is because there's such a great, large theater audience, an audience that goes to theater.
For a sophisticated Midwest city, we like our down-home music, don't we? You got to talk about Pump Boys and Dinettes. You were involved with the Hank Williams Show, and you got a Jeff for musical director, best musical director. And now you got Johnny Cash, and there's shows like Once. There's a bunch of those. There's another one out, Paul Clayton Show, that's in New York now, that's probably coming here. So, I mean, why do you think audiences like this kind of music so much?
Well, for one thing, I mean, most of the shows that I do, and the ones that you mentioned, it's not just the stylistic thing of sort of the down-home, you know, the folk and the country kind of influences. But those are all shows, and most of the shows I do are ones where the musicians are on stage.
Yes.
And in fact, the musicians are the cast and tell the story while they're playing instruments. And I think that people connect with that. I think that...
Yeah, I do. I know. Your empathy is a lot stronger. Yeah.
And you get to see everything being created. Mm-hmm. It's not like the pit orchestra that's in another room, or sometimes nowadays even in another building, connected by video monitors. And you hear, the sound is great, but it's to actually watch the music being created while the story is being told. I think there's something really powerful about that.
I agree. And we might not even be aware of it, but it's there. It's like the old thing, if somebody turns their back, you almost can't hear them speaking, because you don't see the lips move. I think seeing the musicians play really adds a dimension.
Yeah, and I think Chicago audiences have proven that over and over and over again.
So now, you, besides doing these country folk type shows, you did Hairspray. Tell us about music directed Hairspray. That had to be a departure for you.
It was a departure in terms of my musical theater music direction. It looks different than the other things that are on my resume. But again, the music is, stylistically, the music is something that I connected greatly with.
It's kind of 60s rock, right?
Yeah. And a Motown thing. And that was the music I grew up with. Okay. I mean, to be honest with you, a lot of the things I am associated with now, I was an adult before I really discovered Hank Williams or Johnny Cash. Or I mean, I heard the hit records mm-hmm. when I was a kid, but I didn't start playing that music
until sending it to a new generation. I know my young reviewer didn't know. He kind of Johnny Cash was like another name, like Elvis or something. He didn't know anything about him, and he was blown away by the show.
And, you know, Million Dollar Quartet playing down the yeah. road is another show, I think, that has done the same thing for a whole new generation.
Yeah. And, God, what's that running, like 6 years now?
I think it's more than that, actually. I know they broke our record at the Apollo a long time
ago. Did they? Okay. That's one you haven't been involved in yet, right?
Well, no, I have. I was the musical coordinator for the first 2 years.
Oh, okay.
And it was sort of...
I should have known that.
It was odd and interesting to be back at the Apollo
yeah.
20 years later to, you know, to do another show that became such a long-running audience favorite.
How about Ain't Misbehavin', one of my all-time... I love Fats Waller.
Me too. There's so much about that music, about his playing...
That slide piano thing?
The
I know Austin.
Piano, yeah.
Yeah, Austin Cook's got that down pretty good.
He does. He's great. And he literally played some of that for me one. And I, you know, it's one of those times where I literally had my jaw dropped, because it's the, if you're a musician, as particularly if you're a piano player and you listen to those old recordings, it's sometimes you think, wait a minute, there's three hands on the piano. Because he's, and it's.
And he said he sort of just picked it up, right?
Who, Austin?
Yeah.
Well, Austin is an amazingly talented classical pianist.
Yes, he is.
And so he's got great chops, and he's just a great musician, a great ear. And I know he came into that production at Porchlight kind of at the last minute. And
yeah, he did, literally.
Learn
yeah.
it yeah. really, really quickly, which is that in itself is an amazing thing to me.
Well, he did that with the Stephen Sondheim show. I looked at the intermission. You know, there's like 30 songs in there. I'm looking for the sheet music, and there was none. So I made sure I really noticed it at the start of this when it came out for Act Two. He did all those songs out in sheet music. I mean, that's pretty hard, isn't it?
It is, yeah. but it also makes you play differently, I think, as a musician. When I'm doing a pit gig, I find it in myself even. It's you can get to the point where you lean on the page. You know, it's like, I see that music, and okay, you know, don't take it away from me, because I think I know what I'm doing. But when we do a show like where you're on stage and you're actually part of the cast, like Ring of Fire is, you learn the music in a different way, and I think you perform it in a different way. And it's
how do you mean? You change the sound at different times.
I think you make it your own.
Okay.
In a way that is feels different. And ultimately, I think it does sound different. Most of it in that range of what we call feel, which is sometimes not something you can actually literally write down or put your finger on exactly what that is. But it's an approach to the music and an approach to the performance of the music that if you know it and can perform it without reading the page, is a different thing.
So that's why seeing a live... the emotion and energy of a live performance versus seeing something that was laid down in a studio where they did it over and over again until they got it perfect sounds different. And I think they sound better, the live one.
Well, there is, I agree with you, in the sense that a live performance, especially if in a situation where you have a band that's been playing together for a long time, because you can get all of those things, those sort of intangibles about feel and the player, the way the players are listening to each other. You get all of those things, but you also have the tightness and the musical polish that you get mm-hmm. from, you know, if in fact you're recording something and you've got, you know, 30 minutes to record a song, you know, it's probably better to have it written down because you're not going to have that time to take that many takes, you know? And really good musicians can pull that off and read off the page, sight read, and play like they've been playing in a band for 10 years.
Wow.
That's a really, really, that's a very specialized, I mean, skill.
I sense you have a few in this show.
Yes, we do, actually, I think. And I think if you asked any of them, the way we're doing this now would be their preferred way to do it. You know, where we're not reading music, we're just out there performing it as a concert.
Because that's one of the things that my young reviewer and some other younger people who don't know Johnny Cash music, they were so impressed. They said how good the musicianship was in the show. And I go, yeah, these guys are tops. I said, they might have been better than some of the originals. Who knows?
Well, the original, you know, a lot of that early Sun record stuff, those guys were young and they were learning. And you listen to the records and you can hear them learning.
Okay.
How to play and how to play. But often that's where the most original music comes from. From people who haven't already learned everything, you know. So they're sort of finding their way. And along the way, maybe have some very happy accidents that become a genre of music.
Yeah. Well, you got to be proud of the show. A little commercial for the show. Now, you're running at the Mercury. Yeah, what days, what do you want, days do you run?
We run Wednesday through Sunday. Okay. We do 8 performances a week. So we have matinees on Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays, in addition to evening performances.
Oh, that's good. Thursdays during the week, good. And you're running, it's an open run, I assume.
Well, we're running till June 28th, and we're hoping to extend and run through the summer. That would be great if that happens. So far, the way the audiences have been building, I'm feeling good about it.
Well, that's good. And everyone asked me, they said, you know, they talk about what shows in town are worth seeing, and if they're, to play it safe, if they're people from out of town and the only chance to see one show, I send them here. I said, you can't go wrong. You'll just have such a good time. And I've gotten a couple of emails back from people. I didn't even know who they were. And they said, you mentioned it at so-and-so. And they said, we love that fact. We're going to go see it once more before they leave town, which is kind of cool.
Well, thank you. That's great to hear.
Well, but it's good. It you know, it's my way of giving a little bit back. I mean, there's some great shows in town, but this is probably the safest bet. This is a family show. Any young musician's got to come see this show, right?
I think that this is, if you're a musician, I think that what we're doing touches on stylistically on American music styles that you should know. They should be required.
Okay. So this is fundamentals, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. All right. Let's go on some of your other shows. A Little Night Music. You did orchestrations. What's the difference between doing orchestrations and being a music director?
Well, sometimes the music director is required to do those orchestrations, reorchestrations, if the instrumentation you have at your disposal is not the same as what got sent to you from the music licensors. And in Chicago, because especially in off-loop theater, a lot of times those ensembles are smaller. So it's something that musical directors have to do to some degree.
Kind of reduce them down?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The orchestrations I did for Writers Theater for A Little Night Music, and that's like a whole other.
That was a beautiful production. I love that show, and they do a great job up there.
And the space, you know, we didn't have sound reinforcement, so everything was acoustically live.
Yeah, that's right.
Singers, our little orchestra. But I looked at that as being a more of a traditional orchestration project. I certainly took some of the things that Jonathan Tunick did in the original orchestrations for a huge 30-piece orchestra. I took some of those lines, but I basically built it from the ground up rather than saying, okay, I can do without this part, do without this part,
okay.
Which is what happens sometimes when we have to do these reductions and we're not really budgeted for having an orchestrator to do that. As musical directors, sometimes we have to do that. So this was where my only hat in that production was to write the notes down for...
The sound was beautiful.
You did
a great job with it. I think it's better as an intimate show. What do you think?
Well, after having seen that production, and it was an amazing cast, an amazing orchestra with great direction by Bill Brown, it was a really magical experience for me.
Yeah, that's great. And you did some original music for Holiday Memories. Tell us about that. Is that your only or your most notable composition?
Both of my degrees are in composition.
Okay.
I think of myself still to this day first and foremost as a composer, even though that's not where. And as a songwriter, even though that's not where most of my success has come. But that was a production, it was an adaptation that Russ Vandenbroek did of 2 Truman Capote short stories in 1991, I think it was, at Northlight Theater. It was a really interesting experience for me because I was actually in rehearsals the entire process. And it was kind of, well... we need something here that sound, you know, to achieve this result. And it was sort of like improvising stuff on the spot and then going home and fixing it, which is not the way I normally write. I normally go off in my own and make sure that
it's perfect. That's got to be hard doing it. Yeah.
It was a really difficult and amazingly beneficial experience for me to try and do. And whether it's coincidence or I don't know, it was, to me, it doesn't feel like the most substantial music I've ever written. But it's probably the music that has been performed more than anything else I've ever written, because there have been, at least that I know of, 35 or 40 productions around the country that have used
it. Oh, very good. I didn't realize that. Because I know I've seen that work, yeah. And you don't pay a lot of attention to it, but yeah, it's there. So, in the interest of time, I always ask this question. What kind of projects are, what are you looking to do? What is something you haven't done? You had a great career. I mean, there's got to be something there. You still, I got to do that.
Well, I'm sort of transitioning into something I did years and years and years ago before the theater thing really took over in my life, which is recording production. So I'm doing that right now. I'm actually finishing an album with Corey Goodrich, who
she's awesome in the show. Yeah, she's a major talent.
And I love working with her in both of those scenarios. But other than that, I've been working for many, many years on a theatrical piece that did get a stage production at Missouri State University several years ago, that called Cicada Dance. And it's a piece that I've been working on in my spare time, which just never seems to be that enough to do, and really haven't had the resources or my schedule hasn't fallen into place where I can just really devote myself to it full time, which I need to do. That's sort of my big thing that I, you know, I want to.
That's your opus?
Sure that I, that's my opus.
Okay. Great. Do you have a deadline for it?
It's interesting you should ask that question. I don't, and that's probably what I need, because the only reason it got finished, the version that actually got done at Missouri State, even got finished, was because it was my master's thesis project. So if I was going to graduate, I needed to have it done.
Okay.
So for things like that, things of that scale, and just because of the, you know, I have to be doing six things at a time to make a living, it seems like deadlines are the things that really get things finished.
Yeah, so, it seems that way, doesn't it?
So that's probably a good thing, you know, if I was to just say.
Well, maybe somebody will hear this and say, knowing your music, and say, you know, You've got whatever, 6 months, and I want to see it. And if I like it, we'll produce it, kind of thing. Give you a little push. That would motivate you, wouldn't it?
Sure. There's a couple of people in town who I've talked to about it and have sort of helped to motivate me to you know, have given feedback and sort of kept that. I think one of the things I love about theater is the collaborative aspect of it. And so having other people sort of weigh in and say, even just to call me and say, so, how's it going?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, it's good. Oh, I need to do
We need more. Some more original works. I mean, look at it in Broadway. It's all revivals. New shows almost never make it.
And Chicago is in a position to, and it's, we're seeing it happen more and more and more, just the financial stakes of what it takes to put up a Broadway show. Chicago's in a better position to create new work, I think.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, it still costs money, but it's not that astronomical, you know, gamble, $5-10 million gambles.
Yeah. You don't have to have a sting associated with it, or you don't have to have it.
Still a shame. That was a great show.
Already have been a movie that was a TV show before that, or already, you know, the name recognition thing, the marketing thing of, okay, everybody will know something about what this is before we even write the show. We don't, you know, it's possible to come up with a really great original idea or concept.
Sense and Sensibilities. Possible. Beautiful show.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, don't! If you can sneak it,
I'm going to try.
I know it's so beautifully done. It's an example of you can take known material and do it right. See, I was worried about it being in either in rock music or in that talk singing stuff. I hate that without the harmonies. You don't know what I'm talking about. But they did it so beautifully. It was like a chamber music with that period. So you're right. Chicago is a place to do it. They're hoping to take that to New York. that'll help grease the treads for a few other shows.
Yeah.
Well, we, in the interest of time, the best I can tell you is keep up the good work.
Thank you.
I mean, you're a treasure, and it shows. Every show that I've seen you involved with, you're one of those guys, if your name is on it, go see it.
Thank you so much.
I mean, really. I mean, it. You know, some people will do any, take any role, and there's nothing worse than that somebody who's talented who is miscast in a role. But when you're in a show, you bring everything you have to it, and it's obvious to, you know, when you see the show. Also, when I talk to other musicians, you're one of the most respected musicians around. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Thank you for saying that.
I hear that from all, all the other musicians. So keep up the good work. And folks, Ring of Fire is a fun show. Make sure you see it. And make sure you see it play this week. Thank you.